Hello, and welcome to the Feathers and Flowers podcast.
Welcome to our everyday life on the homestead. Chickens, goats, gardening, recipes, sustainable living, and more. Welcome to episode 9 of the Feathers and Flowers podcast. Today we're talking about gardening basics and all you need to know to start your first garden.
With the goats growing and their mothers are already trying to wean them off.
Not really. They're eating less.
They're not eating as constant. They're not eating like 8 times a day. They're eating
like 3 times a day.
Correct. So with them eating less frequently and bigger meals, they're trying to eat on the pasture as well. So we had to go ahead and seed our pasture so that way it would be good and coming in as the weather's starting to warm up. So we've seeded it once already and it was starting to come up pretty good. And then we decided to go ahead and get a really nice pasture mix. And we overseeded that as the old seed was starting to come up. And we've been watering it every morning and every evening. And I just hit it with the first bit of fertilizer, an all natural fertilizer, I'll say. And it stunk up the whole yard.
Yeah,
and
it
barn.
Smelled terrible.
But it's growing. And then we had quite a bit of rain. So,
yes. So, yeah, that's not the only reason we seeded. I mean, it's that time of the year where it's a good time to seed anyways. So we seeded our permanent pastures. Well, not really permanent, but the more permanent structures that we have. And then we seeded where we're going to be putting or moving our temporary electric netting fence, like rotational. So that way we could overseed that because that already had pretty good stand of grass, but we just wanted to give it a little extra.
Yeah, I guess you could say it's not really, like, it is the pastures, but it's not, it's more of a paddocks because it's what's connected to the barn. Like, pretty much we have two buildings. We have, like, the one pasture, paddocks, whatever you want to call it, with, like, a run-in shed, and then we have the other barn that we just built with the paddocks attached to it, and that's what we seeded.
Yep. And you also seeded some of, like, where we're going to be rotationally grazing.
I just kind of overseeded a pretty thick mixture of seed, the same pasture seed that we used. I overseeded that on the pastures that we have already been rotating on. And then we just had to move our temporary electric netting because they had already kind of nibbled down the first pasture that was kind of starting to get green.
Yeah, which they've been on it for several weeks now. So yeah, that was a good...
I think it was 2.5 weeks.
With it just starting to grow, like it's just now starting to warm up for it to grow. So I felt like that was a pretty good amount of time for them to be on it when it's like dead pretty much. Mm-hmm. So
there was a lot of briars and stuff too.
So yeah, the babies are growing fast. They're starting to nibble on hay and a little bit of like grass and stuff they found in the pasture. So won't be long and they'll be eating a lot more of that stuff. So
yeah, they're already trying. Every time we give the moms feed, if we give them feed in the barn and not on the milk stand, the babies are trying to like butt them out of the way and climb up underneath them to get
out of the way.
Hey, Wilder does. He actually tries to headbutt them out of the way prevail, but... Well, anyways, with that kind of not really story of the week, just kind of
what's going on,
little update on the farm. Let's go ahead and hop into this week's podcast, episode yes. number 9.
So before we get started, I just want to go ahead and preface this with, we do not claim to be like professionals. We do not claim to be like extremely like good at what, like, I mean, I guess we are decent because we always do well for ourselves, I guess, but like we're not trying to like tell you what to do specifically. We're just trying to be like a help or someone that you can like look to if you are looking for advice or looking for someone that's already been there, done that, you know, on starting a garden. Like if you're looking for a little bit of advice or just...
I feel like we have, from reading books and reading articles online and watching videos, I feel like we have a lot of information in our heads. We just might not always know that we have the information, but we're not professionals, so.
We've done it before. That's all I'm trying to say.
Been there, done that. All right, carry on.
So, First, we're going to like go into a little detail of like why we set our garden up the way we did and like what our garden setup is kind of. And then we're going to go over what you need to think about when you're, if you want to start a garden and what kind of things you need to think about, before you get started. So that way you're not, going into it blindly. So our garden, because of where we are at right now with renting, we can't have anything really permanent. We can't have any like in-ground beds or anything that we can't really take with us, I guess. And then we don't have a huge area. So our area is very small and we maximize our space as much as possible.
I would say so. Lots of vertical gardening and deep square, like deep raised beds.
Yeah. We have, let me count them real quick. I forgot all of a sudden. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, about 7 raised beds, I think.
Is that counting your flower beds?
Yeah. Those two, we have the 2 flower beds, 8.
I was about to say, I'm pretty sure it's 8 or 9.
And then we have the 2, yeah, 9 actually. Yes, it's 9. Ignore me. We have 9 raised beds, which they're different sizes. We have some that are 4x8, some 3x8, some 4x4, some 1x8.
7.
Oh, yeah, because we cut that part off. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be 1x8, but whatever. And then some 2x5.
Correct.
All kinds of different ones. And then we have a lot of pots of ranging sizes. We have some that are pretty large that we use for potatoes. They're not really pots. They're protein tubs from my parents' farm that my dad used to feed his cows, and they were empty, so we rinsed them out and used them. They're pretty big.
Yeah, they're, I'm not even going to guess how many gallons. A lot.
Yeah. We use those for potatoes, and they worked really well. And then we have some large, like, water tubs that we've used for herbs and stuff like that. So,
and strawberries.
Yes. Oh, yeah, strawberries. And then the strawberries do well in those.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so our garden is 12 by 18?
Correct.
Feet.
Yes.
So that's pretty small. We have a pretty small garden area. Like I said, we can't have anything in ground or permanent. We really don't have the space for that anyways, but we're renting, so we can't really tear up the ground. The raised beds, we should be able to remove those whenever we do move, and just kind of rake it out level with the soil and then plant grass seed, and it should easily grow.
It'll grow for sure.
Yeah. But so yeah, we have that set up because of where we live and where we're at right now. So, but we try to maximize it as much as possible.
I think we do a pretty good job at maximizing the space, especially now that we've started growing things vertical.
Mm-hmm.
And with the archways and everything, I think that's helped quite a bit.
Yes, we have 1 cattle panel trellis going from the 2 4-foot beds, like over our gate area, kind of. It's like a walkway, and that's where we grow. On either side of that, we grow cucumbers, loofah,
peas, said we grow pickles,
sugar snaps. I mean, basically. But and then this year we're adding 2 more cattle panel trellises, 1 to the 2 flower beds that are in front of the gate, so that'll continue make that longer.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're adding 1 more behind it, so where we'll have a 3 cattle panel long trellis.
Right.
So, and that'll be, the other one behind it will be used for squash and probably pumpkins and some watermelon, hopefully.
I just realized if we really wanted to go crazy with the, like, archways,
we could technically do another one after that because it's the same bed, isn't it?
We could also go, once you walk in the garden gate and you turn right,
mm-hmm.
We could go put an archway there, and then we could also put an archway to the left to the strawberries.
That would be a little too much.
I think it would actually block off the 4x4 beds to where, yeah, you could only access them from one direction.
Through the cattle panel trellis, which is pretty easy because they're big holes, right, but it's still kind of annoying.
Yeah, it's hard to get any kind of utensils in there and stuff.
Yeah. That is our garden setup. It's hard to kind of like describe without like a picture or a video, but I mean, you can see pictures of it on our Instagram if you're interested in that. But we have, we use a lot of pots for peppers. We we do a lot of peppers in pots. Too many peas.
Yep.
But, and then we also recently, last year, you built a 1 foot by, that's the 7 foot bed. It was supposed to be 8 foot, but, and that's also for peppers. So we plant one pepper per square foot in that, and that works really well.
7 peppers.
I think I actually put 8 in there last year, but it was fine.
It worked out.
Yeah, it did really good. And it, they're a foot deep too as well. Mm-hmm. So they did really good in that last year. So I'm excited to grow more things this year.
Yeah, and there, it's nice because it's in a part of the garden. So I'll preface, let me back up. So we have a 12 by 18 feet, like foot area. It's pretty much a rectangle. Pretty close to it. It's got like some weird little jut outs and stuff, but for the most part it's a rectangle, but it has a fence around it. The first year that we had our raised beds, we had rabbits that devoured our lettuce.
Mm-hmm.
We had just started getting our corn to grow, and the deer come through and tore that up while we were gone.
Yep.
We had things eating our tomatoes. Keeping the chickens out was a chore. It was, everything was just like a feast on our garden except
basically,
for us.
Basically, yeah.
And the only thing that survived was some of the squash and zucchini if the chickens didn't grab a hold of them.
Yep.
So we had to fence that in the very next year. We fenced that in.
Yeah, before the next gardening season.
Mm-hmm.
Which we used the 4 foot garden fence from Lowe's, I think, as cheap as we could get it because we were trying to get out of this as cheap as possible. Yeah. And then we got the, not the T-post, but the U-post. They're a lot shorter and a little bit flimsier and
a lot
cheaper. And we use that as the main support. And then we did get regular old T-posts for
the corners
and to secure it up and where the gate is also.
Mm-hmm.
I think. Oh, yeah. No, where the cattle panel trellis is too.
The T-post support like the... No, you're right. They aren't on the gate.
Because it pulled apart.
Right. I forgot about that.
They're there, though, because of the trellis. We had to put them in to install the trellis. But, yeah. And then the fencing, we did get two like little gates that were kind of cute to put. Those weren't super expensive, but...
Yeah, they were just like prefabricated. You just buy the fence, and it already comes with like the... hinges and everything. Well, it's not really hinges, it's just on a pole.
Yeah.
And then you just buy the pole with it and you just basically hammer it in the ground, slide the fence on top of it, and you're good to go.
Right. And the reason we chose to set it up there was because it was literally the only flat part. Look, we pretty much live on a mountainside. It's like a straight mountainside, and then it kind of flattens out just enough room for like our house and driveway and its small yard, which the garden's in the on one side of the house and the chicken coop's on the other side of the house, and that's pretty much the flat space on our property.
Mm-hmm.
The rest is hillside. We set it there also because the sun comes up over that hill in the mornings, and that's the spot on our property or on our rental property that gets the most sunlight. So that's why we chose that area.
It gets the first morning sun, which we've discussed it before on previous podcasts. It gets the first morning sun, which isn't until like 10:30 because it's blocked by the hill. And then it doesn't necessarily go down early, but it gets a lot. It gets around 8+ hours of sunlight, especially in the heat of the summer.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it's definitely the sunniest spot for sure.
Definitely. It's the flattest, the sunniest. And it just happens to be right next to our house, so.
Yep, we can literally reach out from the kitchen and get the herbs and stuff.
You literally crawl through that window and go out into the garden.
Yeah.
And then crawl back in the window.
If I don't want to walk around.
I mean, it's just easy right there. So that's our garden set up and like why we chose to set it up. I mean, more went into it than just that, but now we're going to get into like... I'm going to start that over. But now we're going to get into if you want to start a garden and like some things to think about and know before you start your garden.
Right. Because we both kind of had a little bit of a knowledge whenever we decided that we wanted to do the garden. But it wasn't... I feel like we started with a little bit of knowledge, but it wasn't necessarily... Like, we've definitely learned along the way of what to do and what not to do.
Right. Like, I knew more when I started, or when we started together, I knew more about in-ground gardening. Raised bed was kind of new to me.
That's pretty much all I knew was raised bed.
Right. So, we kind of combined our knowledge to make it work. So the first thing we're going to talk about is setup and what you need. So we've kind of talked about our setup a little bit, but everybody's properties and whatnot looks different sizes, different like layouts. You might have all flat, you might have all hill. It just depends on what you've got.
There's that one thing that you showed me on Instagram where the people live on a hill kind of like we do, and they put their raised beds like on the hill cut into the hillside. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I thought that was cool too. So the first thing is how much space do you have? Do you have a little space? Do you have a ton of space to work with? So that all goes into planning your garden and how big you want your garden to be based on what space you have for your garden. Where will your garden go? Like we've talked about for our setup, you want to pay attention to where the sun comes up and goes down and how much sunlight hits the area where you want to plant. South facing is ideal because it's like the warmest.
Gets the most sun exposure.
Right. And you want at least 6 to 8 hours of sunlight hitting that because a lot of plants do require that amount of sun per day in order to actually produce and be productive.
Some require more, but most of them like as a minimum of 6 to 8 hours,
Yeah. So, and then another thing you want to think about is, are you able to till or dig up the ground where you are? Like if you rent like us, that might not be an option, but if you own your own land, that can definitely be an option. And, will you want to do raised beds if you need to, or you maybe just want to do raised beds, or you might want to incorporate both. So depending on that, like what method do you want to use? We won't go into like what all the methods are, but, like, do you want to do raised beds, like traditional rows using like a tiller or a plow, or do you want to use a no till or no dig method, which is very like environmental friendly and like the most natural for the earth and like is the most helpful to the earth.
Yeah. It just takes that method just takes a little, it takes quite a bit of time to actually get established. But once it's established, it's probably the best.
Right. I would love to be, there's a ton more research I want to do on it, but I would love to be able to do that one day.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it's like the most,
it's what the
cohesive,
natural world
right,
does.
Like, right. So, you can research all about the different methods too, but like I said, we're not going to go into a ton of detail in this episode. That might be something we talk about on future episodes. But small spaces can benefit from square foot gardening. I don't know if you've ever heard of that, but that's basically where you plant a certain amount of plants per square foot in the raised beds. Or, I mean, you don't have to use a raised bed, I guess, but that's like typically what you use square foot gardening with is raised beds.
Yeah, square foot gardening is actually a term coined from Mel Bartholomew. It's actually his book, is Square Foot Gardening. And that book is awesome. It tells you like exactly how to like to make the soil mixture, how much of like the vermiculite versus compost versus peat moss, how to fertilize it. Like how many carrots to plant per square foot. Like he goes into so much detail as he makes, like we do the same thing, but his is actually, he makes like square foot sections on the raised bed.
We used to do that before.
We just kind of use a string.
Right.
But he makes the square foot sections and then that's like 16 carrots per square foot or one head of cabbage, like one broccoli plant or, you know, so on and so forth. He tells you exactly like every plant that you could think of, he has how many you need per square foot.
Right. And like square foot gardening does, like especially in a raised bed or a container, the plants are going to take more of the nutrients being spaced closer together because you're not spacing them out as much as you would probably if you were doing them in rows. But so you have to be able to like fertilize and put compost in more often. But yeah, there's like charts you can look up online that shows how many plants you can plant per square foot of each plant. Like tomatoes, I believe it's like 1.5 square foot per one plant. Mm-hmm. But whereas like carrots, it's like 16 carrots per square foot.
I think
you're tongue-tied today.
I think carrots are some of like the highest per square foot that you can mm-hmm. plant. Because I think beans are like 5.
I think 9.
Is it?
I think.
I can't remember.
It might be 5.
You can always look remember. It up.
But yeah, we've used it before. And then after you determine where your garden is going and what you're going to do, setting up is the next step. So will you need to borrow or buy a tiller, a broad fork, or a plow in order to like set up your rows or get the plot ready to go? Because you really can't just like plant it in grass. You have to have the earth at least tilled up a little bit in order to get going.
Yeah, you got to break. I mean, you can, just like whenever it comes time to like seed your pastures and stuff, you can always just throw the seed out on the ground and it will take, like a lot of it'll take, especially grass seed, because it's made, like they've kind of made it able to do that better. But I mean, it always works better if you can get like some kind of drill seed or a scarification machine of some kind that breaks the ground up a little bit so that way the seed can actually get into some soft ground.
Right. And then will you need to purchase and build or put together raised beds? We need to purchase pots. We need to purchase soil or compost to add to already existing soil or to fill your raised beds if you're doing that method.
Yeah, I think it the very first year it took us a lot because we didn't have any dirt. And then now we just kind of like mix the dirt back and forth between the raised beds. And if we need to buy a bag of dirt, we will, but I don't think we will this year with our compost bin.
Right. And then we also did find a local farm that we got a load of compost from that first year, too. That helped us a lot. That always helps because buying dirt can get expensive.
Yeah, especially because, like, you can go to your local store, whether that be, like, Lowe's or Home Depot. I think Lowe's is the Stay Green or whatever is their brand of it. And you can get, like, I think it's a 3-cubic foot. Bag for a couple of dollars, and it's okay to like fill the raised bed with or to like do some of the raised bed,
but not all of it.
It's not the great, like it's got a bunch of chunks in it, it's not great soil, but like the raised bed soil specifically is like really good for a raised bed or any kind of pots.
Right. Yeah, trying to use, like, soil is very, very important to your garden's health. Like, if you don't start with, like, a good soil base and good compost mix, your garden may not thrive as much. Soil is very, very important.
Right, and the raised bed soil is extremely expensive compared to just, like, the regular old Stay Green stuff.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, usually it's, like, $4 a bag for the cheap stuff versus, like, it can get up to, like, $12 a bag.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now for the Miracle-Gro raised bed soil, which is 2.5 cubic feet. It's $12 at Ace Hardware.
Yeah.
Which is less cubic feet and more money.
Yep. So if you can either A, already have a compost, or B, find a local farmer that has some compost for cheap or free that they're willing to give you. Because we got ours for free because they wanted rid of it. They didn't have a use for it. So right.
It was literally just all like the stall chips and like manure and everything piled up in a giant pile.
Yeah, and it had just rotted and become soil basically.
Mm-hmm. So I just backed my truck up and they gave me 2 scoops of it, filled the bed of my truck up, and I was happy.
Yep, yep. So yeah, that's always good to think about. You want healthy, well-draining soil for your plants to thrive in and not to cause more issues. And then will you need any sort of trellises? Do you plan on doing some vertical gardening, or do you want everything like on the ground? That's always something to think about. You can always add stuff later, but it's just something to think about initially. Things that vine will either spread out on the ground or they'll go up if you let them go up, or like cucumbers, certain varieties of squash like spaghetti squash, watermelon, pumpkins,
mm-hmm.
cantaloupe, and like just other kinds of melons.
You'd be shocked if you really look at it. Like some people, like just the straight up like regular like Ford Hook zucchini and other types of squash and stuff, like the just the regular summer squash that most people just let grow, they will put in like a tomato cage or something and let it grow up. It helps reduce like
squash bugs
and funguses and stuff mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah, vertical gardening is very beneficial in a lot of cases. We need to figure out a way to water your garden, or is there already existing or easy access to water? for us, our garden's right next to our house, so that's a pretty easy fix. Yeah. But it
just comes right out of the basement.
Right. And we, of course, we've made modifications and updates to ours over the years. But I mean, for somebody that may have, you know, 10 acres and your garden's like, you know, a couple acres away right. from your house, like, what will you do to water? Will you have to get like a big tank? When I was growing up, we used to do that. We'd get a big old, one of those big old water tanks that would go up in the back of a truck or something. And we would put it in the back of an ATV or something and fill it with water and take it down there and have a hose and a cutoff hook to it.
Right. And you can always do, if you have like a barn or a building near your garden, you can always do rainwater capture too, which yeah. is beneficial. If there's a creek, which depending on your state, there's different regulations and stuff on if you can pump out of a creek or a river.
Mm-hmm.
So you just have to kind of be careful of that.
Right.
But I mean, probably the most beneficial thing is just to have an ATV or like a truck or something that has a way to transport the water. Like your dad's got his big work tank that's 500 plus gallons.
Right. Yeah. So that's something to think about. So that's something you may not think about until after you've already like established your garden. And then you're like, how am I supposed to water this big old thing way away from the house, you know, and you can't really run water lines to it. Yeah. So that's definitely something to think about before you really also map out your garden as well.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these things are things to think about, and really the sky is the limit on like what you want and what you can do with your garden. It's very personal to like each individual's wants and needs, and there's always going to be unique setups and spaces. So really you can go as big or as small as your space allows and as you feel comfortable, and no one's garden is going to look the same or be the same. So
yeah,
so that's just some general ideas and concepts to
and
think about.
I mean, one thing that I could recommend to anybody that's going to start a garden, unless you live like in the city limits or something, to where you're just basically on a balcony or you're like have a very small backyard, I would recommend pretty much to anybody to get at least some garden fencing, because it's not that expensive and you can actually get some really like aesthetically pleasing garden fencing, like mm-hmm. wooden picket fence, but it's a lot better. I've seen our garden has done so much better because you have no idea what kind of creatures come out at night and
right.
eat on your garden, whether it be rabbits or possums or coons or whatever.
Yeah. Yep. You really don't know. And we've talked more about like bigger gardens today. Ours is like smallish to medium sized, I guess. I mean, it's definitely not huge.
I wouldn't say medium. I'd say it's small.
But I mean, we've mentioned pots and stuff. I mean, you can have a little garden on your balcony if that's all the space you have. You can grow some tomatoes in some pots, 5 gallon buckets. You can grow herbs and Lindseal. I mean, you can do a lot more than you think you can.
I mean,
in
growing
small
up
spaces.
Growing up, when we started our square foot gardening, we started with one raised bed that me and dad built, and we enjoyed it. And then we ended up building basically like a keyhole style, which is basically like a square foot garden in the shape of a U. So you can walk into the raised bed,
mm-hmm.
and it's just like all the way around you, except for where you walk in, is a raised bed.
Yeah.
And I mean, that fed our family. And I mean, that was very small square footage wise. I would say it was probably like maybe 15 square feet, probably.
Right.
Something like that. I mean, it was very small and it fed our whole family. So, I mean, we got tomatoes, potatoes, herbs, squash, zucchini, and everything. So
the second thing that we're going to talk about is what to plant and when to plant. So this is going to be a lot of your own personal wants and desires, and also based on where you live, because it's not going to be the same for everybody. So first of all, you have to figure out what zone and climate you're in. If you're like more towards the colder climate, or if you're more towards a warmer one, we're kind of like in the middle, zone 7.
Yeah.
So
it goes to 10, so we're pretty close to the middle.
Yeah. So, and I feel like sometimes we lean more towards 6 because of where we live with the mountains on either side of us.
Yeah, definitely. Because your parents and my parents both obviously live really close. We live within 20 minutes of my parents and just right down the road from yours, and their climate just seems so much different than ours, and it's just right down the road.
Yeah. So that will determine the amount of days that are in your growing zone. Like,
how many days the plants will grow.
Yes. Without being killed, basically.
Right. Without a frost, either the first frost or the last frost.
Right. So that's the next thing is you, when is your estimated last frost date and first frost date? How many days is your growing period? That's what I'm trying to talk about, is your growing period. This will determine what you can or can't grow, because some things have a lot of growing days. Like some of our tomatoes, I think, are like 80 days or something to maturity.
Or loofahs.
Yeah, loofahs are even more than that, because not only do they have to grow their vines and all that, and then they have to grow their fruits, but then you have to let them dry out on the vine if mm-hmm. you're using them for sponges. But
and then you have things that are really short, like most of the beans, like legumes, usually are pretty quick. I feel like lettuces are pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
They're usually like 60 to 80 days.
Yeah.
And then cabbage. We found the 45-day cabbages this year, mm-hmm. and they're literally, they're from start to finish, it's supposed to be 45 days.
Right. So, yeah. So, depending on when your first and last frost dates are, will determine what you can and can't grow for the most part. And frost dates aren't exactly accurate all the time, especially for us. Ours is supposedly for our, for where we're at, our zip code and everything, our frost dates are supposed to be the last one in like mid-April, and we usually can never plant anything until after Mother's Day in May because it frosts multiple times usually after the mm-hmm. supposed last frost. So you kind of have to learn as you go depending on where you're at. Some people are in like Florida and never get a frost, hardly ever, so you really don't have to worry about that kind of thing.
Or California.
Yeah, but so yeah, and then you think about what you like to eat and what you already are buying at the grocery store. And that can be as far as like things that you can grow. Obviously you can't just grow like steak, but
technically
you can. That was a bad example, as in garden things. So like, what are you eating already that you can grow? Like, do you buy a lot of salad mixes? Do you buy carrots? Do you buy green beans, canned green beans? Do you buy canned corn? Do you buy pizza sauce all the time?
Right.
Do you buy garlic powder?
Also, you have to look at how much space something requires in the garden versus how much it costs at the store. Like corn, when we eat corn on the cob a lot in the summertime, you can usually find it for like 25 cents an ear or less.
Right.
And it takes a whole raised bed for us to grow enough to even it be worth it. And most of the time it gets messed up anyways.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, I mean, one day we will grow corn when we have more space. But for now, that's just not worth it to us. We'd rather grow more tomatoes, more beans, because corn, the amount of corn that we can grow, we would still have to buy it at the grocery store. And then we would also be having to buy tomatoes and beans at the grocery store because we wouldn't have enough space to grow the amount that we do of those.
Right, but now we don't buy green beans or tomato-based products at the store.
Right. So, and then you can also think about how many plants will you need for what you plan to do with it. How many people are you feeding? For us, we're just feeding two people with the occasional time that one of our family members or parents come over or something, or we share it with them. So how many people will you be feeding, and do you want to be able to preserve it? Do you want to be able to eat it fresh? Do you want to do both? So that will determine how many plants of each thing that you want to grow. So if you're going to be eating or preserving for five people, it's going to be a lot more versus just two people, for instance. But that's something you have to think about if you're wanting to fully preserve a full, like, year's worth or, you know, a winter's worth of tomato sauce, for example. But just because you're starting a garden doesn't mean you have to preserve it immediately on the first year. You can just take the first year to learn and see what you like and don't like.
We really didn't preserve that much that we grew the first year that we had a garden. Mm-mm. We just bought stuff at the farmer's market to preserve.
Yes. Yeah. If you don't know how to preserve anything, I highly recommend going to, like, a discounted food store where stuff's about to go bad. Like, I bought last year, I bought a gallon or more of strawberries that were about to go bad that had been discounted like over half. So it was like super cheap. And I was able to preserve those strawberries into jam because, I mean, they're perfect for jam.
Mm-hmm.
And that was much cheaper and a way for me to learn and get better at it instead of wasting a pound of strawberries from our garden. And that wouldn't have left much else if we even had it that much strawberries, which we're just starting to get more and more strawberries. But, I mean, for instance, if we had that many strawberries and if I'd have messed the recipe up or something, then we would have wasted all that fresh things that we had grown.
Right. And then, too, you have to know, too, like, do you have a greenhouse or are you going to buy your starts from, like, somebody local, like a local nursery or, like, somebody else that starts them? Or are you going to try and start them from seed? And starting them from seed can take a lot of extra space, more so than what you actually think that you'll need. I mean, our first year, we had them, like, stacked in the bathroom with a bunch of, like, lamps and everything.
Yeah, that's definitely something you want to think about. I mean, there's nothing wrong with anything, any of those. You can buy starts from your local nursery or, you know, big box store.
We do all of the above.
Yeah, we always end up going to a local nursery looking for like one or two things specific, and then we come out with like a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, usually.
It's just inevitable. I mean, we're just attracted to it. But yeah, that's definitely something you want to think about. And if you do want to start your seeds, which we'll do another podcast episode soon on seed starting, but if you do want to start seeds indoors at your own place, then you will need more supplies and more setup and more time, because you have to give them time to grow. Like, for instance, tomatoes usually are started about 8 weeks before you would actually plant them out in the garden, whereas you could just, if you were ready to plant in May or, you know, mid-May, you would not be able to start a tomato from seed, and then you would probably not get a harvest off of it at all before the frost.
Nope, just a couple of tomatoes, if that. That's like, I mean, that's how we extend our growing season for luffas, is we start them really early inside.
Mm-hmm.
So they're a well-established plant. Usually, they've already got quite a bit of vines coming out.
Right.
And then we transplant them outside, and then they just take off.
Yeah, but if we had waited to start our luffa, the first year we grew luffa, we didn't start it until like we started our squash and everything, and it wasn't big enough and it didn't grow fast enough, and we didn't get luffas on the vine until like end of September.
Mm-hmm. And we didn't get that many luffa sponges.
I think we got two.
Yeah.
That were ready, but that was it. So yeah, that's why we start them a lot earlier. But and then another thing is that you have to think about what plants do better in cooler weather and are frost hardy. So for example, lettuces, spinach, cauliflower and broccoli, peas, some herbs, cabbages, carrots, potatoes, stuff like that. Those are all things that do better in cool weather and don't do well in hot weather. So you want to think about that when you're planting your garden as well, and when to plant those things, because if you wait and plant them in June, then you probably won't get much of a harvest, if any, right, on some of those things like lettuce, for example.
Yeah,
unless you live in a colder climate.
Yeah, you have to be careful too, because basically it's succession planting, because you'll have like your raised bed, like if you're using a raised bed or if you're using in ground, but you'll have like your cold crop stuff that you plant out earlier, like in February, March, like your lettuces and spinaches and broccolis and stuff, and they'll be done by the time your tomatoes, peppers, squash and zucchini and stuff like that is ready to go outside. So you just basically swap them. You pull out the old stuff that is, you've already harvested, and then you amend the soil a little bit, and then you put your new stuff in.
Right. We'll talk about that more in a few minutes, but yeah, that's definitely something you can think about when you're planning out your garden beds too, beforehand, before you even plant. And then you also have what plants do better in warmer weather and are more cold sensitive, such as tomatoes, peppers, squashes, beans, some flowers, things like that, that will die if they get frosted on, or won't thrive at all if you plant them and the temperatures are below 50 degrees. They'll just be very slow and not productive at all. So that goes into when you're planting certain things. And then for us, we typically plant cold hardy things starting in March, because for our zone, that's when it starts to warm up a little bit. It's not so bitterly cold, but it's still cold enough to where the things like lettuce and things do really well. And then for the cold sensitive things, we usually don't plan out until around Mother's Day, like we said earlier, because we always get surprise frosts, usually at the end of April, beginning of May.
Mm-hmm. And we're scrambling around trying to find plastic and stuff to cover them up.
Yep. So the last thing we're going to talk about so far, we've talked about like how to set up, like what you need to look for and stuff like that as far as planting your garden. And then we've talked about what to plant and when to plant. That's really up to you and your setup and desires. And then lastly, we're talking about actually planting your garden. So you'll want to have like a game plan, so to speak, before going out with all of your plants, or you'll get overwhelmed like me and won't know where to put anything.
You don't do that anymore, though.
Right. I have a game plan.
Right.
A pre-planned, written out, drawn out, game plan.
You literally draw it out on graph paper and have it literally every single plant has a place.
Yep.
And you sometimes even plan for like if we have extra plants where they're gonna go.
Right. Like
you actually kind of have a plan B already with right. your plan A.
When I'm at the very beginning of the year, when I'm planning out what seeds I'm going to order and what I want to plant this year, I'm already drawing out like how many plants we're gonna plant of each and where they're gonna go in the garden. So that way I'm not starting like 12 plants when I'm only gonna plant 4 in the garden. I mean, right. obviously, we could sell them or give them away to family or friends if we needed to. That's not too big of a deal to plant more, but you at least want to plant the minimum of what you want to plant and a few extras in case one dies or something.
Yeah, we've always made it kind of a something that we purposefully do is have at least a couple of extra plants because it's inevitable that a chicken's going to get in there and tear it up or a pest, some kind of bug or something's going to eat it. We're plagued with the tomato hornworms. They always end up getting in there and tearing something up.
Yeah.
So it's always good to just have a couple of backups ready to go.
Right. So another thing you want to think about when you are planting is light. So some plants need more light than others. And of course, as the season gets warmer, that means heat as well. So, certain things like lettuce, for instance, doesn't like a lot of heat. It will bolt. So will spinach, cilantro. There's quite a few things that will bolt as it gets hotter.
Mm-hmm.
So think about like tomatoes. They start out very short when you first plant them in the garden. They might even be shorter than some of your already established lettuce plants, for example. But they're going to grow quickly and they're going to quickly become taller than the lettuce plants or whatever you may have planted. So if they're going to be shading some things in the afternoons, you want it to be things that benefit from the shade or the cooler, a little bit cooler. You don't want to shade things that need full sun. So think about that when you're planning your layout for your garden is
the sun direction. And like if something's going to grow taller, is it going to shade out something else that needs sunlight?
Right. So yep. So, yeah, something that doesn't lack as much heat would do good being planted in the shade of the taller plant and vice versa. So, we've already mentioned this a little bit. Think about companion planting. What does good or bad planted beside each other? Some things cannot be planted beside each other, but some things benefit greatly from being planted beside each other, like tomatoes and certain herbs like basil.
Mm-hmm.
We love planting herbs.
I think basil being planted next to tomato plants makes it taste better.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Same with peppers. Peppers, mm-hmm. tomatoes, basil, and oregano. I love to like intermingle together. Oh, yeah.
And then marigolds too.
Oh, yes. For pest control. So, yeah. There's a lot of charts out there that you can look up for companion planting that you can see what's good to plant beside each other and what's not good to plant beside each other.
Yeah, I think the most famous one is probably the corn, green beans, and
squash
all together.
Yeah, it's like that old Indian way to mm-hmm. do it. But yeah, there's a lot of charts out there that you can look at to see, to figure out based on what you're planting, what goes good and what doesn't. Another thing we've already talked about too is think about your soil. Some plants are more nutrient sucking than others. So you'll want to make sure that you're, you know, applying compost and and fertilizer as needed to those that are more nutrient sucking than others. And you might have a bed or a spot in your garden that you know is more nutrient dense than another spot, that might be a better option for that certain plant than somewhere else in your garden.
And if you're doing in-ground gardening, one thing that we've kind of learned is there's plants that you can put in the ground as kind of like a pre-planting, something like a root crop like carrots, potatoes, sunflowers, something that's going to have a really strong root that's going to reach down into the ground and break up the dirt.
Mm-hmm.
That's really good to plant first. Then the next season, whenever you till it up, it's going to be a lot easier to till up because that root has already went down and broke up the dirt.
Right. And then, of course, some of your plants, depending on what you're planting, will need to be trellised. So think about that when you're planting. You don't want to plant your cucumbers over on the end of the garden next to your peppers and then plant your, I don't know, something that doesn't trellis.
Next to a trellis?
Your beets next to the trellis. Then you'll be all messed up and wish that you had swapped them.
Yeah. And your peat, don't plant any kind of peas next to not a trellis, because they'll find something to trellis, whether it's something that you want it to trellis up or not.
For sure.
Because it'll trellis up your tomato plant or whatever it has to get up.
Right. Yeah, we had green beans, some vine and green beans trellising up our sunflowers, which wasn't a big deal. It was actually fine. Yeah. But they'll find something.
Yep. They want to go up, even if it's the side of your house or a building.
Yep. And then think about spacing. Some plants need to be spaced out more than others in order to be healthy and productive. Like we kind of talked about earlier with the square foot gardening, like tomatoes require more spacing than carrots, for instance. So you just got to think about that whenever you're trying to plan out your garden, so that way you space things properly and don't have things overcrowded.
And a lot of times too, if you know that you're going to harvest something really heavy, you can, like for lettuce, we don't really stick to the however many lettuce per square foot, because when we are eating lettuce, we're eating it a lot and we keep the head of lettuce really trimmed down. We don't really grow head lettuce very much. We grow like a loose leaf style of lettuce. Our favorite's Merlot. And we keep it cut back a lot so it doesn't really get super big because we harvest it so often.
Right.
So we can kind of break that rule.
Yep. And then another thing we already kind of touched on, think about succession planting. What can you plant after something in its place when it's done producing? For example, when it gets too hot for our lettuce, we always plant something else in its place so that we can maximize our space. We have a small garden, so we try to maximize literally all the space that we can in that garden. But if you have a bigger garden, that might not be an issue, so it may not be anything that you care to do. But
right. I think last year we ended up planting onions in our lettuce spot after we got done planting lettuce.
And a melon.
Yeah, and melons.
Yeah.
We use the greenhouse like frame to let it trellis up.
Yep. Yeah, and then that's another thing you have to think about when you're succession planning is what sometimes you can't plant certain things after certain things because of a pest that may have attracted or something like that. It could cause the next plant to not do good. So that's something to think about too. And I've not done too good of a job at thinking about that when we succession plant all the time, because usually we have a certain select few plants left and that's the only spot that's available to them, so we just throw them in there anyways and hope for the best. And then pest control. So you got to think about pest control also. Are you okay using a chemical or an organic type of pest control method, or would you prefer a more natural method? We don't like using chemical anything. We use plants basically that repel pests or attract them to get them off of others, or we use like removal, basically manual removal. And that's pretty much the only pest control that we use.
Like I said, the one thing that we've been kind of plagued with other than squash bugs recently and vine borers is we were pretty plagued with the tomato hornworms, and they absolutely tore up our tomatoes. And even peppers, hot peppers, bell peppers, it didn't matter. But one thing that we learned that is really good for tomato hornworms, because there's not really anything you can put on it, even a chemical that gets them away from the plant. So what we did is we bought like 3 or 4 bird feeders mm-hmm. and some really tall shepherd's hooks and put them kind of like in the 4 corners of the garden. So as the birds fly over to get the bird seed, if they see a big old juicy worm, obviously they're going to stop and get the big juicy worm. And it, I think it's really helped. I think we've had a lot less tomato mm-hmm. hornworms in our garden.
I agree.
And other pests.
Right. And then we also remove them manually if we see them. We try to look our plants over at least a couple times a day.
Them suckers are hard to see.
Oh, yeah.
Until they get big.
They blend in with the leaves. They're green. Usually we only see them if they have those little like white things on them.
Yeah, those are the eggs and it's already too late then.
Yeah, or something. I don't know. But yeah, so we prefer natural methods and we always love planting marigolds, especially throughout our tomatoes and peppers, because they are a natural repellent of bugs. And then this past year, we planted nasturtiums in with our squashes. They don't repel like marigolds. They actually attract the bugs, which is good because it attracts them away from the squashes and to them. If there's going to be bugs, I'd rather attract them to a plant that doesn't matter.
Right. I mean, a nasturtium's pretty, but I mean, I think you can actually...
It is edible.
So you can eat it, but for us, we just plant it so that way the bugs go to the nasturtium and not the food that we're trying to eat.
Right. And the 2 squash plants that were directly beside the nasturtiums were the best ones we had all year. They didn't die. And the rest of them did eventually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're planting a bunch of nasturtiums this year.
Yes. So that's one thing to think about is pest control. And then... we think about all of this before I actually plant the garden out. We, like I said before, or like you said before, we use graph paper and draw out the garden and I guess we do draw it to a scale.
It is to scale.
But it's not like to the big scale. Isn't to scale mean that it's like the same size as the actual garden?
To scale means that it has a measurement.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, so I do draw it to scale then. I get confused. So I draw out our garden beds and the whole garden basically to scale. And then we fill it out, putting everything where we want it to go and where it needs to go based on like all the things we just talked about. So then when we actually go to plant our garden, we just follow our little map that we've made. And it's super easy because we just mm-hmm. look at the map and say, okay, this goes here. And then that's where we put it.
Yep. And it's worked out for the last 3 years.
Yep.
So the first year was a little hectic. We just kind of put stuff where we thought it would be good, took some notes, and then the next year got better, and then last year we got better, and then this year will be even better, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Maximizing our space. I feel like we do a better job at that every year. We do a better job at like succession planting and companion planting every year. You just learn something every year. And the first year is like usually you're like
terrible.
Most... I mean, it may not be terrible, but like you learn so much.
Actually,
so
our first
take
year,
notes.
Our first year, I think we did really, really good because we didn't have as many pests because the pests didn't know that we had a garden. So yeah. we had like rabbits and stuff that came and nibbled on stuff, but we didn't have as many like bug pests.
Yeah, they hadn't found the goods yet.
Right, and one thing that we've implemented this year, I guess I've implemented, it's been something that I've been looking forward to, is irrigation. We're doing drip irrigation this year. Last year I tried to do kind of like a roundabout automated system, and I got some soaker hoses and those things sucked. And then I tried,
they didn't soak.
Nope. I tried to do a sprinkler on a timer, and we started getting some fungus on like our tomatoes and stuff from where the water was splashing up onto the leaves. So this year I just kind of bit the bullet and actually got legitimate drip irrigation hoses and started putting that out. And so far, it's been running for almost a month, and everything is doing really, really well.
Yeah, so far, it's just pretty much the 2 little lettuce beds that we have that's getting it, and then the strawberries, the herbs, and then the cabbages and broccoli.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I can notice a difference already in them regularly getting watered twice a day, that they last a lot better throughout the like heat of the day, whenever we do have a heat of the day. They don't wilt or anything. They just stand strong and grow.
Right.
So I'm excited to see what it's going to do whenever we have a full garden.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, so this is pretty much like the main gist of like what we thought about like when we were starting and like what a new gardener. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot more things you could think about, but like, I feel like
this podcast
like,
could be hours long talking about like how to start gardening.
Yeah, but this is just like, if you're thinking about starting a garden, this is just some things to think about and to think about beforehand, before you actually start. I mean, and we could also talk about the investment it takes too, that gardening can take, because
don't look at like Instagram or like even, I guess even us, because I mean we've taken almost 4 years to get where we're at now, and don't look at people's garden and be like, I'm gonna do that, because there's some gardens that I see on Instagram with like the beautiful fencing and the nice like double entrance gates with a greenhouse inside the fenced in area and beautiful raised beds
where you can drive beds.
Right, where you can drive like an ATV in between them with a trailer, and it's like all aesthetic and everything. Like, I want that, but I know that's going to cost a ton of money. First of all, we don't even have an ATV, so.
Or the land to do it on. Right. So, yeah, don't compare. Make it personal to your goals, your lifestyle, your budget, your spacing. There's not really a right or wrong way to garden, as long as you're growing stuff and harvesting stuff. I mean, yeah. Obviously, if you were killing all your plants, that's obviously the wrong way, but.
I mean, I think the biggest piece of advice that I could give to anybody, like if somebody come up to me and said, I want to start a garden, what's your biggest piece of advice that you could give me? It would be start a garden.
Yes.
Like don't listen to everybody saying like you need this and you need that. Like don't make it more complicated than it has to be. Just start.
Right. You'll learn so much. Plant the plants. Go to the nursery and buy however many you want,
right?
Whatever makes you happy.
If you don't want to build a raised bed, go somewhere. I mean, you can find pots on sale anywhere. Go to like a Roses or a Dollar General, and you can find some pots.
Oh yeah.
So I mean, you could get started for as cheap as like $50, probably.
Oh yeah.
And you could. I mean, when I was a kid, the first thing that I really remember doing was my parents bought me like a $10, and this is before inflation, but they bought me like a little $10. Like herb garden set that had like six different types of herbs, and it hung on the windowsill.
Mm-hmm.
And I planted my herbs, and I had a little windowsill herb garden.
Yeah,
that's the first really garden that I remember doing, and that taught me a lot.
Yeah, so yeah, just doing it teaches you more than anything, really. Just doing it and getting the experience and taking notes, that's a big thing too. I've taken notes every year since we've started gardening mm-hmm. together, and I always learn from it, and I always look back on them from the previous or the next year and look back on them and say, okay, well, this worked, this didn't work, you know.
Yep. I'm not trying to quote anybody specific, but just do it.
Oh my. Yep, just do it. You learn as you go, and
your failures will lead you to success.
Yep. And yeah, so there's much more we could talk about in the gardening world, but this is just like what we believe and what we have thought or learned to be like the basics of getting started and what you need to think about or know. So yeah, just do it and have fun along the way.
Alrighty, well, thank you everybody for joining us, and that's the conclusion of our podcast episode number 9. On gardening basics.
And we will see you next time.
Mm-hmm.